You ever feel like you're stuck in fight or flight mode, even when you're just trying to make it through the workday or sit through your kid's soccer game? That edge, the hyper awareness, it's useful in a firefight, but it's exhausting when you're at home. Now picture what life would be like if you had tools to handle the chaos. That's what this episode offers. Barb Thompson is an Army veteran and operational psychologist who spent her career helping elite units and everyday warriors master their mindset. We talk about performance under pressure, rewiring the brain after trauma, and building mental resilience before life goes off the rails. Whether you're facing tough transitions or trying to be more present with your family, this conversation's packed with strategies that can shift the way you deal with stress for good. I also want to take a moment to raise awareness for something deeply important to our community, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. This organization is working to build a permanent national memorial in Washington, D.C. to honor the service members, families, and civilians impacted by the global war on terrorism. This memorial serves as both a tribute to those who served and a way to ensure their sacrifices are recognized and remembered for generations to come. If you want to learn more about the memorial or find out how you can support the mission, visit GWATMemorialFoundation.org. Now let's get into today's episode. Hey, Barb, welcome to the show. I'm really glad to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk a little bit about your background and kind of your experiences. You are an Army veteran, turned into a psychologist. You have a lot of pieces that are really important to our audience. So I kind of want to get to know a little bit about who you are and a little bit about your background first, if you don't mind just kind of sharing just a quick overview of you and your background.
Sure. I'll do the nutshell version and then you crack it any way you want.
Excellent.
So I was born and raised in Stillwater, Oklahoma, and got an undergraduate degree in English literature. I'm not really sure what I was going to do with it. I just enjoyed studying, you know, like why people thought and felt the way that they did. And now that I'm a psychologist, you can kind of see how that led in that direction.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then I ended up doing graduate work in psychology. Still didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do. Had a great mentor in graduate school that was like, where are you going to go next? Where are you going to get your doctorate? I had never thought of such things ever. I mean, I really was in a place I had never thought I would be in anyway, in the first place. So, but I felt like I knew just enough to be dangerous and I really loved learning. So I kept going and got into a doctorate program. And at the end of that program is when I learned about psychology within the military, and obviously threw my hat in the ring, and it changed my life forever. So I got to live in all different places and learn a lot of different things, and it's been a really rewarding and meaningful experience.
Well, and I think people like yourself who, you know, get into the military, especially with a psychology background, that is something super important in the military, because I don't know what it is, but we are not doing all that great as far as our mental health condition. Maybe we're just too thick-headed and we don't want to get the help. I don't know what it is, but we need more people like you who are able to, I don't know, crack through whatever it is that's blocking us from either getting the help, admitting that we need the help. I don't know, whatever it is, but to have just someone to be there, to be able to help with whatever these issues are that we might be experiencing. You know, we're losing too many people, you know, quite frankly. And it's something that I feel very strongly about. And I want that 22 a day number, if that's even an accurate number, I don't even know anymore. I want that down to zero.
Right.
You know? And so, you know, people like you who can, you know, be close with the people who are serving and kind of nip it in the bud before it, you know, gets out of control. That's, I think, super important. And part of the reason why I wanted to have you on the show, because I, you know, looked a little bit into your background and stuff. And I thought this was super interesting. You know, someone who I wish I had known you during my time.
Yeah.
Because it would have maybe saved a lot of issues down the line had I had someone, you know, like yourself or, you know, people like that to be able to help out, you know, along the way. But, you know, so You said you got to live in a lot of different places. Kind of overview, like where were you stationed? What kind of places did you get to experience?
Yes, my first duty station was at Fort Sam Houston in San Antonio and did a little bit of training there. That was my like pre-doctoral internship. So basically your year of practice prior to your graduation, you're completing your dissertation and all that kind of good stuff, really busy year. And then I was introduced to operational psychology. And at the time the Army had a postdoc residency at Fort Bragg in North Carolina. And it was a whole nother side of psychology that I didn't know about and just like lit me on fire. And I said, it's funny, you know, like kind of walking into a room and then an hour later, you have this whole new direction. Obviously, it's not a new direction, but yeah, it was really cool. And so I went through that assessment and selection process and then went to Fort Bragg and started kind of like on the job training for operational psychology, which took me outside of, you know, traditional clinic and into some really exciting areas where I could still be close, you know, to the service member, but just, you know, consult in a different way.
So you mentioned operational psychology as kind of a new direction, not entirely new, but it, you know, a branch off of the direction that you were going, perhaps. How is operational psychology different than traditional, I don't want to call it vanilla psychology, but you know, your general traditional psychology, you know, what is the difference there?
That is a fantastic question. So for the most part, we're trained clinically, we're trained in the same way. So our schooling will look very similar, but it comes to practice. Down to practice. So a clinical psychologist is the expert on, you know, a patient comes in or a person comes in, they do an intake or a debrief or, you know, whatever you want to call it, get to know that person, make their diagnoses, and then create a treatment plan based on those diagnoses to see that person get well, right? An operational psychologist is still clinically trained. So everything a clinical psychologist knows about human behavior and assessment and things like that is similar. It's just that we utilize that information a little bit differently. And so some of the areas that are most common to see operational psychologists working in are the assessment and selection of personnel for, you know, high-risk, high-performing teams. So you'll see that in the military, you know, our SOF, Special Operations Forces units, where we consult to leadership on organizational development, training, performance enhancement, crisis negotiations, consult to aviation. So using, again, that knowledge of human behavior and human factors, but in a way that hopefully helps it operationally rather than on an individual level. Another area we consult to, you know, intelligence operations or counterintelligence operations through a number of different ways and through, you know, consultation to military interrogations or indirect assessment. And then another way I think people generally see us is out at the SEER school, you know, kind of SEER psychology, that study of human behavior when you're isolated or, you know, detained. And then on the flip side, the knowledge of what to do with a person upon, you know, hopefully a successful, you know, repatriation. So those are a few of the areas that outside of the clinic, operational psychologists consult with military units. And there are operational psychologists in other organizations that work in similar functions.
All that makes a ton of sense because you look at someone who is going into, you know, special forces or, you know, any of those high risk positions, you always think of them as being certainly physically fit, but man, you got to be mentally fit to handle those jobs too, right?
Yes, sure.
Big time. Mm-hmm. And so just like you would have a screening process for physical conditions, you want to make sure that these people are top notch physically. Yeah, why wouldn't you want to make sure that they're top-notch mentally as well? Because God forbid they crack under pressure or, you know, any of the things that could happen to someone operating in such a high-stress environment, you don't want to be finding that stuff out in the middle of a firefight or, you know, in some other must-be-completed kind of mission. You don't want that to be, you know, found out at that point. That's a little too late in the process. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure, the person may be a stud as far as their PT and their physical appearance goes, not just appearance, but their physical abilities goes. But if they can't handle it mentally, that's going to be a problem. So we're talking about a lot of things, you know, mentally, obviously, you know, talking about psychology. And you're a big believer in the power of mindset, and you've worked with a lot of high performing individuals. How does someone manage to maintain that strong positive mindset, especially in those high pressure situations? You know, we see that a lot in, you know, those kind of higher tier operator levels, special forces. But how do they maintain that kind of mindset going through those types of things?
Yeah, I think there's 100 things I could say about this. So I'll try to break it up into a few sections, but
maybe 80-20 it, you know?
Like I know, right? So it really depends. It depends, right? There are some things in performance psychology that you could teach, you know, kind of to most individuals. And I think that might be most beneficial for this conversation.
Sure.
But to maintain a strong mindset, I wouldn't even necessarily say positive, because sometimes
okay. Yeah, that's true.
You know, whether it's positive or not, what you really want out of it is the progression, right? To keep going, to keep moving forward, you know, to stay strong in the midst of kind of failure or chaos or uncertainty. So the human brain is really made for survival, and it likes to make up rules. It likes to make up routines so that decisions are easy. But when you add stress, obviously, you can see that that becomes more and more difficult.
Sure.
And so part of maintaining that strong mindset is breaking it up into pieces a little bit, right? And there's lots of different cool stories, survival stories, right? About whether it's POWs, you know, that we've studied from, you know, the Holocaust era, or whether it's people who've been, you know, doing these fantastic, you know, alpine climbs and gotten stuck somewhere. Like, there's lots of research with humans who've had to endure a lot more than maybe you and I kind of in our day-to-day lives. And you can obviously take that to the battlefield as well. Mm-hmm. So a few of the things that we've learned from those people is that distancing yourself from the situation can help a little bit. One fantastic way to distance yourself is to keep in mind the hero's journey. Now, this is a theory by Joseph Campbell. You see it in every kind of like Marvel movie ever made, right? It's like the same storyline, but it works. Like, we're hooked, and we're hooked because we experience that as humans. It's this constant phasic nature to life. And so there's this hero, and that would be you, or that the listener. If you're listening, you're the hero in your own story, right? And you have this sense of calling to something greater. You kind of step out into that. You experience trials and tribulations along the way. You eventually get to this deep, dark place where no one ever wants to go, right? And then along the way, you're given tools or mentorship to kind of get you through those deepest, darkest places. And you come out on the other side having grown, having been enlightened. I know you know, because you've experienced these really deep, dark places, right?
Yes.
But it's constant, right? So if you can picture yourself on that loop, then it helps distance you from the current situation, the moment you're in. And then you also know simultaneously that it is phasic, that it doesn't last forever, right? The deep, dark place, the belly of the beast, like, you can come out of it, and you will, because you've done it in the past, and you'll face other beasts in the future. So distancing is one thing that I like to teach. I think it's fantastic for any difficult place you find yourself in, especially the ones that you don't choose. Like, a lot of people join the service because they want to do hard things, right? They want that challenge. That's a mm-hmm. challenge they choose. But many times what ends up happening, either when you're in the service or when you transition out, is you're faced with, you know, difficulties in life that you don't want. And for some reason, we have a totally different attitude towards these difficulties. And we throw our hands in the air, and we throw a temper tantrum, and why me, and all this kind of stuff. You know, we turn into toddlers when we chose really hard things. Like, we can do hard things. It's just that we wanted those hard things, and we don't want those hard things. But, you know, in life, we don't get to choose. So I like distancing. I like using the hero's journey as an example for that. And just being able to picture yourself, okay, it's fine. Like, I'm in a trial and tribulation, but what I know from the hero's journey is like, I can reach out to other people. I can do my research, right? I can stay connected. And eventually the phase will change and I'll come out stronger for it. And I'll be able to share that experience back with the quote unquote normal world. Right. Another skill I like to teach is just small goals and small victories. So for example, if you are, whatever your metaphor is for running a marathon, I'll use marathon as a metaphor for life. But let's say that you're in a pretty chronic situation, then what you want to focus on is not the entire situation, but I'm going to focus on making it to the next mile marker. Mm-hmm. And that's all I'm going to think about. One foot in front of the other, making it to the next mile marker. And then you make it and you're like, yes, I made it to the next mile marker. And that little bit of dopamine is just enough fuel to kind of get you to the next goal, which is probably the next half mile or the next mile marker. So really being able to, again, you do a little bit of math when you're not feeling like you're in the best place, make small goals and celebrate small victories. And
so basically not eating the whole elephant in one go, bite at a time, right?
Yes. It's simple skills that we've learned. But when the brain is under stress, it tends to be and think a bit emotionally. And so we lose the logic, right? We lose the how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time, and then it doesn't make sense to us and we don't know how to apply it to this situation. And that is when you can just reach out to someone else. Hey, like, I'm trying to keep a strong mindset. What does this look like to you? Because they already have that distance from the situation, right? They already have that perspective. Sense of humor is too a way that we know that people are able to gain perspective through kind of looking at this and say like, oh my gosh, like, a couple of years ago, I never would have imagined myself in this place. Or a couple of years from now, I'm going to look back and think that this is pretty funny, even though it is so miserable right now. Yeah. So those are a few skills that you can use when you're kind of in the midst of trouble. But work on those, you know, if you can, before you hit a bad spot. The way you work on those is using the challenges that naturally come to you daily in a normal life. And applying them there, right, as practice, so that when the really hard things come along, you're like, okay, I know what to do. It's going to look different. It's going to feel different. But I do have some tools here in my tool bag. But the greatest skill, it takes some work too, that I've seen work in both, you know, assessment selection and then people are downrange or even when, you know, let's say like their child or their wife is diagnosed with cancer, like anything just unimaginable, is doing the work ahead of time to know why you do the things that you do, right? Like at the end of the day, when you number your days and you say, my life is short, what does it really stand for? Then that is the fuel that keeps people going during really hard times. So if you can, again, think through that and think at least three layers deep, you know, why am I doing this? Like, for assessment selection, we might ask that at the very beginning, and we do it to help them through the process so that they have something to grab onto when things get really bad. And time again, we say, like, how did you get through that moment? It wasn't going well. You know, it was kind of on the fence whether all this effort was going to pay off. And they're like, oh, I remembered why I was doing it. And not just that surface level why, but like, okay, and why is that important to you? And why is that important to you? So try to go like three layers deep, but
okay.
I could talk on that forever, but those are a few strategies.
Yeah, I like those strategies, and they all make sense. Now, one, I was jotting down some questions as you were talking because it was all good stuff. But one question I had is with the first thing that you were talking about, distancing. I am completely familiar with that. I know exactly what that looks like and have used that myself. But perhaps, or now maybe I'm thinking of something different. So in my experience, it was kind of like I had to like put that aside, put that, what that negative thing was aside, so I can focus on the here and now and handle whatever the situation was in front of me. Now, do I come back? Now I have to come back and pick up that thing that I distanced myself from in that moment and deal with it eventually, because I can't just leave it there, because that's just going to be a lot of heavy weight that I'm dealing with? Or am I thinking of something different than what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think it depends. When I use the word distancing, I just mean like a perspective shift. So okay. If it's just you in the situation and all you can see is that 5-meter target, by mm-hmm. using a distancing technique, you're kind of just able to see a little bit of the bigger picture, which sometimes gives you the perspective of like, okay, in the whole picture, like this is a small piece.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I get it. Yeah, I get that now, because that 5-meter target when you're standing 5 meters away, that looks like your whole world. That looks huge.
Right.
But when you back it up to, mm-hmm. I'm not even a 30,000-foot, 1,000-foot view, you see a whole lot more.
Right.
And you see that sliver of that 1,000-foot view is just a real tiny piece of the whole overall picture. And there's, hey, you might be finding some good things out there too.
Exactly.
And that's, I think, the goal that you're talking about. So what I was talking about was something completely different. That was what I was talking about is kind of more of a temporary countermeasure for
crisis mode. Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is something that we teach in like in the moment performance. Like let's say you're going into a shoot house, you absolutely have to be focused on what's right in front of you to perform well. You can't be thinking about thoughts or emotions or anybody watching or how you're being evaluated. Like any of those internal or external distractions will keep you from doing the job in the moment. But yeah, those would be two different things. Both effective as far as performance is concerned, but as far as like an overall mindset and a way to look at life, the distancing is a bit more like perspective taking rather than trying to compartmentalize a tough thing. We really, in order to get the most from it, need to embrace it at the end of the day. Yeah,
exactly. And that's I think is where I was getting at, because I had a feeling I was thinking of something different than what you were actually talking about.
I love it, though.
I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah.
And I'm sure some of the listeners maybe were thinking of something similar as well.
Right.
And so, you know, I want to make sure that we're all on the same page here. But I like that mindset of that distancing. It's almost like you have a picture on your phone. You know, it's like real close to, you know, somebody's face or whatever. And then you like zoom out on, you know, kind of like scroll out or whatever. And you get to see the whole picture. And before it was just like that one person, but then you look at it and it's a whole crowd of people. And you realize there's a lot more going on than just that one thing in that picture. So that's a interesting way to think about it. And honestly, something I don't think I had thought of before this conversation is to kind of take a step back and, you know, just in a practical terms, like I think I get what you're saying now. Just practically speaking, though, you want to just be able to look around you and, yeah, maybe this one thing is falling apart in your life and you're having trouble with this one area, but look at all the other things that might be good. You know, if you have a family and, you know, they're healthy and okay, well, I can be grateful for that. And I think at the end of the day, it comes down to gratitude and just being able to look at those things that you can be grateful for. Right.
Yeah. By using a distancing or chunking goals, any of that stuff, sense of humor, you're really trying to just stop that fight or flight response.
Mm-hmm.
Right, to a chronic kind of stress issue, stop that fight or flight, because that's an emotional response in, you know, through your amygdala, which is totally an emotional part of the brain, and just lock back into, you know, the decision making, the logic that comes when you're able to take a few steps back, take a few deep breaths. And we find that you just have more capacity, that the dots are connected a bit more when you can engage that part of your brain also in looking at, you know, the problems you're facing.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Now, on the other side, so those are some tools to kind of deal with some of the issues that people might be facing. But, you know, in your experience working as an operational psychologist, what were some of the challenges that you were seeing people dealing with, whether it was, you know, like pre-selection or like maybe a post-deployment type thing, where they were coming to you afterwards and, you know, PTSD type things, or what were some of the major issues that you were experiencing? Not you experiencing, but you in the people that you were seeing, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think, I mean, you already mentioned a lot of it, but so pre-selection, it's the hard you're choosing, right? So you're excited about it. You're motivated. Yeah. You're locked in. You're focused. Your time, your attention, your effort is all focused on one thing. And so that's a more simple way to kind of live life. And it might not seem simple for the people around you, but cognitively, it's more simple than, say, post-deployment when it's been very busy or kinetic, or there's been a trauma, either, you know, life was lost, that, you know, a loved one, someone you were close with, or there's civilian loss on, you know, on the other side of things. Mm-hmm. There can be a number of things that happen on a deployment, or sometimes it's just like, you know, something catastrophic happens at home and you are just away and you feel a loss of, you know, there's no sense of control like you would normally have if you were here to help. So there's a number of things that just every human being, no matter how high performing you are or not, you know, you'll face those types of things whenever you raise your hand to do hard things, because there is no way for us to predict what you're going to be exposed to. So there's really, there's almost no way to, I guess, the myriad of ways that I've encountered, you know, individuals as they sure. cross that lifespan of their yeah. service. But
I guess that was maybe a bit of an unfair question, because there are so many different people with so many different experiences and so many different reactions to those experiences. And some of them could be, you know, better than others, even if they were in the same firefight, for example. They experienced essentially the same thing, but they could have two completely different
That's
experiences
right.
from their
yep.
perspectives. And yep. that could result in two different, you know, ways of dealing with it. To one person, it could have just been a big nothing and you're like, oh, it's just another day. And to somebody else, it could have been, well, this could have been
life-changing.
Life-changing mm-hmm. for that mm-hmm. person. Exactly.
Yeah, and I think, like, let's... however it is, we don't choose it, right? Like
right.
the effect that moment or those series of moments or how the years accumulate, many times we don't choose how our brain decides to perceive those. And
sure.
and that's important to know. So whether it's that you're having thoughts that, like, you know, it's just not worth it anymore, or you don't feel safe with yourself, mm-hmm. or you don't have any connection to other people, or your heart's racing at random times and you don't know why. Like, a number of things can happen that really, I've found that many of the guys are surprised by. You know, we've
yeah.
trained them in the best way. They are the best of the best. And still, of course, like, they're humans.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like I said in the beginning, the brain is built for survival, and it's going to take those snapshots of, you know, whatever cues in your environment. And it does that to keep you alive, right?
Right.
It's all for your survival, but sometimes those things stick with you, and it's hard to make sense of. And I think that's when it's important to early and often you want to talk with people, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk with your buddies. And like you said, everybody has different experiences, but it is a good way to stay connected,
sure.
which we know buffers stress in every phase of life, is staying connected to other people that you feel close to and just feeling that support. And then, of course, there are, you know, professionals that will have all kinds of very effective treatment protocols. And even then, like, it takes a lot of courage to go, not necessarily because of the stigma so much, even though, of course, there's always going to be
sure.
the stigma. And that's just a human thing. Like, that's not a military thing. That's a human pride, right? Like, that's
yeah.
our ego. It's just a human thing to say, like, I don't want to admit that I have any problems. I don't want to ask for help. So that's not a high performing thing. That's not a low performing thing. Like, that's just our human ego getting in our way, quite frankly. You know
sure.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, exactly.
And
you were talking about something about the, you know, in those high stress environments, you know, our brains are wired to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like you were saying earlier, we create a set of rules that enable us to survive.
Right.
You know, and that's from a very young age you do that. You start learning
unconsciously.
Things are,
absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's not like you have to go to school to learn these things. This is just through life experience. You learn that this thing is dangerous. Okay, well, don't do that thing because I'm going to get hurt. Or this thing is safe, so do more of that thing because I'll stay safe if I do that thing.
That's right.
And so those are the types of rules that help you survive just every day. I don't care if you're going to the grocery store or if you're walking down downtown, you know, Ramadi or whatever. Like, it doesn't matter where you are. Like, those are still things that are currently with you. And unfortunately, you get placed in situations where you might have to do certain things that go against some of those rules that you've created to keep yourself safe. Like, I might have to go rescue my buddy who is under fire. And, well, generally, I wouldn't go run out into where people are shooting because that's stupid. Like, you don't want to do that. But I also need to, you know, provide, you know, cover fire for my buddy so that he can get out of this area that he's pinned down in. Well, that's breaking one of those rules that you've made up in your head, you know, unconsciously, like you said. But when that rule gets broken, I have to imagine that there's probably some psychological implications there that maybe you have to, you're wrestling with, you know, like how do I reconcile that in my mind, you know? Is that something that people are dealing with, or am I?
Usually it just looks like some form of anxiety. So like whenever life is not looking like your brain wants it to look, then you feel anxious.
Sure.
And there are a number of ways that, you know, with help, you can decrease that anxiety. And the great thing I think is always extremely encouraging is how malleable and changeable the brain is. So it can be rewired. It just takes time, you know, and effort and repetitions.
Yeah. And I think to your point earlier that you were talking about doing those small things, the humor, the you know, those other things that you were talking about, the distancing, all the things that you were referring to earlier. Doing those just in your day-to-day life when you have a minor setback, a minor inconvenience, you know, you can laugh at that because at the end of the day, who cares? It's not a big deal.
Right.
And then...
But that's a rep. You just got a rep.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. That's the point that you're getting across here. You've gotten that point across to me. I'm just kind of reiterating it in case
I love it.
Listeners are not, you know, tracking on that. But every rep that you do is just like a rep in the gym. Like, if you haven't lifted any weights like for the last 10 years, well, you're probably going to have a difficult time going back in the gym and lifting the same weights that you did when you were 20. You know, it's just not going to work the same way. But you can start building that up again slowly, and with enough work, enough repetitions, enough effort, you might get back to maybe not exactly what you were when you were a young person, but you know, when as you get older, and I'm experiencing this myself, it's harder and harder to get back to where I was when I was 20, and that's a tough pill to swallow sometimes. But it's the same idea where, you know, the more repetitions that you do with anything, the better it gets. It's almost like that muscle memory. You know, if you want to get good at a sport, you have to practice it, and you have to do it the right way. Like my youngest son, he's a pitcher in baseball, and I've told this story on the show before, but not for a little while, so I'll say it again because it's kind of applies here. He was pitching, and he was doing the sidearm thing. Like, he was throwing sidearm, and he was throwing the ball all wild, all over the place. And he was in the backyard practicing one time, and I said, you know, you're gonna get really good at pitching the wrong way.
Yeah.
And so there is something to be said about those repetitions, that if you're doing the wrong thing, if you're, you know, just letting those negative thoughts stay and fester, and you're entertaining those negative thoughts without countering them or whatever.
Oh, you'll get better and better at it.
You'll get better at being negative. Yeah. You'll get really good at being negative. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's just true. Like with my son and pitching the wrong way. Yes, you can practice, but you're going to practice the wrong way. So you're going to get good at doing it the wrong way and not doing it the right way. And so, you know, same thing with these thoughts that you're talking about. And, you know, these are choices that we make too, because when those negative thoughts come into our head, we can choose to just let them get us down, or we can choose to laugh them off, you know, use a humor technique like you were talking about, or, you know, any number of other things that we can do to kind of counter that. And that becomes that next repetition, right?
Yeah, use it as an experiment, honestly. So you're having a bad thought.
Yeah.
You know, write down the bad thought, right? And then challenge it. Say like, well, what if I'm wrong? Like, what are some alternatives that might also be possible, right? And I think challenging your thoughts is a great way to start that change process.
Yeah. What might also be true? And be honest about that, right? Because it's easy to get down on yourself and convince yourself that, nope, world is ending. I'm a failure. I'm a,
right.
You know, whatever. You can get really good at doing that really quickly. But again, that's that bad pitch that I was talking about. You can get good at that, but it doesn't mean that it's right. And I've experienced that myself too. And I'll be completely honest with that. Like that's a
we
tough
all have.
Thing.
Yeah. We all have. Every single person. I don't care who you are. Like with me, like just put the ego aside because it's almost always in the way. Yeah. Like it's almost always in the way. Are you human? Okay. You've had problems.
Yeah.
Period. Right. But what I love about change and the body and the brain is like you can do it either way. So you can start by challenging those thoughts that you have and playing devil's advocate and looking for alternatives, right? Like you can challenge, you could start in the mind, or you could start in the behavior, right? And act as if, okay, like I'm feeling a certain way, but I'm going to act as if I'm going to behave in the way that I want to feel. So I'm feeling unmotivated completely. I'm feeling kind of down and depressed, but I'm going to act as if I'm not, which means I'm going to get up and I'm going to go for a walk, or I'm going to call someone who's important to me, right? Or I'm going to get in that morning jog. I'm going to get my 8 hours of sleep. So I'm going to act as if. So we find that change can actually happen at either end of the spectrum, whether you're going to start with the brain or whether you're going to start with behavior. So behaviors repeated over time can eventually work backwards and change your thinking, or changing your thinking over time can affect the way that you behave. So that's good news. You can start at either end, whichever end you prefer.
Yeah.
And both are effective at making change.
Well, that's a good thing to know too, because for me anyways, I a lot of times I feel like it's like I just have to have the thought and then I have to do something else to counter that thought. And, but maybe there's something I could do on the other end and maybe even make it so that those negative thoughts don't creep in, at least not as often, you know?
Right.
And that's a good way to look at it too. Right. And like you said, it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, special forces.
Nope.
You know, it doesn't matter if you're a civilian who has never experienced any military life whatsoever. You're going to have a bad day at some point. Hopefully there are fewer bad days than good, but you're going to have bad days. It's just part of the human nature. Things are going to happen to you and they're not going to be pleasant. So how do you deal with those? How do you cope with those? And I think this is something that, you know, especially in the military and the veteran communities, that we have such a big issue with veteran suicides and, you know, marriages that fall apart and just all sorts of issues that people end up having.
Right.
I almost feel like some of this should be taught early on, you know, basic training even level, where you give people the tools beforehand, before they experience these high stress, negative type situations, and let them be able to use some of those tools that they've learned. Because I mean, I know when I went through basic training, they taught me how to disassemble machine guns, and I still know how to do it. Like you remember these things, right?
Right. And you do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to your point, so we at the highest levels were like, so these are not boys and, you know, girls anymore. They are men and women. They've had, you know, a life of service already. They've been once at least assessed and selected. They're coming again now, right, to continue kind of going up that to the tip of the spear. And at that point, before they would start any of their technical physical training, this is where we would start. We would start with defining your why. We would start with psychology of performance, right? In a classroom, talking, yeah. Right? Because that becomes the game changer at the end of the day. Because for most skills, they can be taught. And what we like to do is break all of these kind of mental and psychological skills. Well, most people don't think of them as skills. I think sometimes they think you're either like born that way or you're not. Sure. And they are skills. They can be learned. They can be practiced. But yeah, the feedback we got from the individuals kind of going through that experience with us is like, I wish I would have known this earlier. Right. And so there are, I think, efforts to teach it, you know, at a younger and I would say in earlier and earlier phases within the military, at least. I know that it's catching on in fire service. Fire service and, you know, police have had similar issues mm-hmm. with family dynamics and suicides. And so, yeah, it's definitely like we're going to teach you a lot of skills that are going to make you a professional. And part of the skills we're going to teach you are mental and psychological skills. I would love to see that. Yeah. And it's all about, I don't think it take honestly, like, it doesn't take a psychologist, in my opinion, to teach these things at every single level, right? And then you can kind of get into higher and higher levels of these things as people continue to develop in their careers. But certainly, that's the feedback we've gotten, is like, I just wish I would have known this earlier.
Yeah, and I think that's true with any of these life-changing revelations that we have, that
yeah.
it's like, oh my gosh, I've been struggling with this for so long, and had I just
Pointlessly.
Yeah, I mean there's something to be said for the struggle that,
it's
that
so you go true. Through. It is
useful to some extent.
Yes.
But sometimes it feels like, oh my, come on, like, let's get through this and be done with it. Like, what is the purpose? Especially when you're going through it, it feels like it's meaningless, it's pointless, and it just sucks. It's
never going to end, right? Yeah. It's never going to change. Mm-hmm.
Like you're on a road trip with your family and your brother just keeps poking you or something. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh my God, just stop.
Right.
Can we just get there already so that it stops? You know, it's one of those types of things where you want it over. And had you had those skills and tools and resources before you experience these situations, not to say that it wouldn't still be negatively affecting you, you know, a death of a loved
one.
It's still going to be hard.
Yeah.
But at least you have the tools. It's
right.
You know, like if you had to build a house without a hammer or saw or, you know, backhoe or any of those types of things to get the house built, and you just had your bare hands, I'm sorry, that house is going to be a piece of crap. You know, it's going to suck. You need the tools. And so you have to get those tools in order to be able to use them. And I think the earlier on that those tools can be taught, and again, it doesn't have to necessarily be a psychologist who's teaching
it.
You know, anybody can be teaching it.
Mm-hmm.
The earlier on that people learn these tools, the easier of a time those hard times will be for mm-hmm. them, I think, going forward.
Yeah, and I think it normalizes our negative emotional experiences a bit so that there's less guilt and shame. And when there's less guilt and shame, then we're quicker to reach out to people. We're quicker to be like open to doing things in a different way or thinking about things in a different way. So that guilt and shame really keeps us trapped in more of like an egocentric, like just thinking about myself or how I'm going to be perceived or what's wrong with me. Yeah. So I'd love to get away from all that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And those things are awful traps to find yourself in. And you know, I'm sure any of the listeners who are listening to this right now, who are relating to that, they can agree that it's just a terrible place to be. Nobody wants to be there, but we keep putting ourselves there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that I find fascinating in a crazy way. Like, you know, especially from my own experiences, it's like I could tell somebody else if they were saying the same things about themselves that I'm saying about myself, I would tell them, no way. You know, I'd give them all the reasons that none of that stuff is true. Mm-hmm. Looking inward to myself, I have the hardest time sometimes. And,
yeah.
you know, I,
yeah.
I've started to learn some of the, these tools that you're talking about and some of the things to help work through that. But it's hard. And I know a lot of people have trouble with that. And, you know, but again, if you knew this stuff earlier, it'd just be so much easier, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I know a lot of veterans, a lot of maybe even active duty, some spouses and folks like that are listening to this show, probably would love to know more about what you do and find out more information. You know, I'm sure we could continue talking for hours on this topic because there's so much to cover, but you know, there's only so much time in the day. And, you know, I'd love to leave a little for the listeners if they want to, you know, reach out to you and find out more about what you do and that type of stuff. Where can they go to find more information?
Yeah, you can go to drbarbthompson.com. That's a pretty easy place to find. Sure. Yeah. And you can find me on LinkedIn also. Yeah, LinkedIn is a funny place. You don't want to like be on there too much, but I have found that it can be useful in creating meaningful connections, and sure, that's what you want to leave it with. But you can, I'm happy to, I have people message me and we'll hop on a call and we'll talk it out. I love doing that. I love saying like, what's the problem? Let's strategize together and just think of some ways like moving forward that you can use this for yourself, your team, or your organization. There's a couple of organizations that I'm passionate about and I think might be helpful to your listeners.
Yeah.
One of those is called Shields and Stripes. Mm-hmm. And it is a holistic treatment program for veterans and first responders. And what my friend Steve has done and Jen, they have put together a holistic team with, yeah, you've got your psych assets, but you also have strength and conditioning, you have physical therapy, occupational therapy, you have like spiritual assets, you have dietitians, and they're looking at you from every angle. And you do this 3-week intensive treatment program with 7 other individuals, right, who are facing, usually it's trauma of some kind, so PTSD or some type of cognitive issues from TBI. But check them out. We're moving to 3 cohorts a year, and this is an all expense paid treatment program that's been life changing for the individuals in it. So I would encourage, you can find them on my website as well.
Okay.
Yep. And then Hero Games Charity is another one that is, it honors a Gold Star family every year through a 1-day, it's a full day immersive team experience. So if you've never been through an assessment and selection, you've never been in the military, or you have, you know, like me or like you, you will love the day spent out in the Blue Ridge Mountains honoring a Gold Star family with a 45 pound ruck on your back and doing some team events. So yeah, those are some things that I'm interested in, places you can find me. Like you said, I think it's tip of the iceberg, you know, that we've talked about. And I think there are many practical things that can help not only veterans, but the people who love the veterans. And then as well as we do share a lot of similarities with, you know, first responders as well. So,
yeah, absolutely. And to your point, the people who love the veterans, the veterans sometimes don't know where to reach out
start.
Or just don't, I was this way. I was too thick headed and I didn't want to reach out.
That's right.
I can handle this on my own. I can figure it out.
Yep.
But sometimes a little gentle nudge from a loved one, a spouse, a family, other family member, someone like that might just push you in the right direction to find the help that you need. And so
Go and watch some of these testimonies of people who have, they're like, well, yeah, like, oh, we do have plenty of people who are like my wife or my best friend. Like they told me to apply that I need to do this. And then it's the same thing. It's like, why didn't I just do it earlier?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like your life is so valuable. Let's not waste any of the days.
Right. And the other way to look at that too, is that, you know, if you're a parent or a spouse or child of someone, whatever relationship it is that you have with those other people, I'm sure everyone wants to be the best at it that they can be. I want to be the best father I can be. I want to be the best husband that I can be. I want to be the best whatever that I can be. And if I'm not going to my kids' games because I don't want to be in the crowds of people, if I'm not, doing things, going out with them, taking them bowling, taking them to the movies, or, doing things with them because mm-hmm. I don't want to, then mm-hmm. I'm not really giving them the experiences that, that they should really, they should be able to experience as kids. Yeah. And so I don't do it necessarily for me. I mean, yes, there is that component, but a big piece of it is, what is my why? Going back mm-hmm. to that, my why is those other people. Those other people in my life that I care for, that I want to show up for them the best way that I can,
Yeah.
And I think everyone has to figure out what that why is for themselves.
Yeah. And we can definitely help in that area too.
For sure.
Change is scary, but it is. I guarantee you've already faced scary things. And I also know I've seen it, that there is relief. So that's what I want for everyone.
Absolutely. And you're doing great work, and I really appreciate everything that you're doing.
Same to you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But thank you so much for not only the work that you're doing, but also for taking the time to come on the show. I really did enjoy our conversation, and looking forward to maybe having another conversation in the future to kind of chip away at some of this iceberg.
Yeah, really. That sounds great. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Thank you.